Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of October 11th, 2015. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing today, D.R.?
Good. How are you doing?
Very well. Very well. So, D.R., we have spoken many times. Of course, we're trying to analyze issues related to climate change. One of the big issues we've been talking about since our first show in January is the fact that at the end of 2015, there will be a large meeting in Paris, which goes by the name of COP21. The COP number 21 will be held in Paris in December. And that is coming upon us like a freight train. And I thought we'd take a minute to discuss what the status of that whole process is. So let me remind folks, the target here is the negotiation of essentially a global international treaty to address climate change. It should happen in Paris in December of this year. The things that have been leading up to it are many and varied. Of course, we have talked again at some length about Pope Francis's encyclical, which is basically trying to put its oar in the water, so to speak, to guide countries to take the Paris negotiations seriously. Mm-hmm. President Obama here in the United States has, number one, released a clean power plan, which, again, we have talked about at some length here on this show, about controlling both old and new power plants. Of course, there's lots of opposition to that, but a very important point is that power plant does not require, that plan does not require congressional approval. So he can take that to Paris and say, I'm going to do this, right? I don't need Congress. The other thing the president has done is to talk at some length with China and has had a diplomatic triumph in enlisting China to actually take concrete actions. And this past week, maybe we can talk about it, China agreed that they were going to impose a cap and trade system. Mm-hmm. And then there is another process that has been going on all year long called, and it goes under this funny acronym, IDNC, which stands for Individually Determined National Contributions, which is essentially each country volunteering how much carbon they will commit to reducing, how much carbon emissions they will commit to reducing. And that has been going rather well, DR. I mean, are you familiar with some of the countries that have signed up and made those commitments? I mean, I can kind of remind you, but can you list some of those up?
Well, the most recent one is now India, which announced recently that they're going to try to reduce what they call their emissions intensity. In other words, for example, switching from coal to natural gas as a means of reducing the overall carbon emissions, even though they're still, you know, saying that they still have to sort of pull millions of their citizens out of poverty, and that's their priority rather than cutting carbon pollution overall.
And just because you oftentimes hear this term energy intensity, and really what they're saying is that per kilowatt hour of electricity generated, they will make that electricity with less carbon per kilowatt hour. Of course, that doesn't put any absolute limit on how much carbon you can emit, right?
Exactly.
But it is a way to phrase a goal, something to try and work towards.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, it is, and as has been pointed out on numerous occasions here in the United States, you now have China and India committed to action after years and years of demagoguery about China and India's alleged refusal to do anything about carbon pollution.
Right. And it's my understanding, I guess, Brazil has put in numbers. In a sense, it is encouraging. A guy named Joe Rome at a website called Think Progress has put up a discussion saying that if these commitments are for real, we may have given ourselves another decade, a sort of a decade advantage in terms of ability to reduce the carbon emission further without damaging, reaching this 2-degree limit. In other words, exactly. It's a good thing. We're helping ourselves. It's a good thing to have done to have these commitments made. Mm-hmm. And all of this stuff is heading into a negotiation in Paris, as I said, in December. Mm-hmm. There's another article I was looking at saying how the recently, in contrast to the TPP, which we beat up on in the last show, in contrast to the TPP, the treaty being negotiated in Paris is public and open, and everyone can read the proposed language, and that it is in fact quite encouraging, because one of the new features in the treaty that's being discussed now is that all the countries that sign on will agree every 5 years to come and revisit their commitments and presumably make them more challenging, right, to do more exactly. and more every 5 years. And that's a great thing. And another interesting feature in this upcoming treaty in Paris is that it harkens back to a couple decades old distinction between developing country and a developed, such as the United States country, and a developing country, such as maybe a country in Africa. In the past, China was called a developing country, and so they got off with much less stringent requirements. But in this current round of discussions, I guess China has agreed that they've rejiggered this definition of who's developing and who's not, so that truly poor countries, say in the Horn of Africa someplace, don't have to get dinged. But China moves into a more responsible position of, since they're a huge economy, exactly. where they're trying to take more responsibility for their carbon emissions.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely impressive, and it's definitely interesting. And even further than that, there was another interesting report from Reuters saying that BP, Royal Dutch Shell, Statoil, Total, and four other major oil companies are going to have a meeting, their own meeting in Paris next week, to explain, you know, what they're going to commit to, and they're going to reaffirm their call for international carbon pricing in Paris. So really? It's nice to see that even, the people who've caused the problem are now calling for a solution. So that's
so
nice.
Are the four
see.
Those four guys going to get together and decide to go out of business? They're going to mutually all.
Well, I mean, I think they're going to basically say that we need to have some guideposts for a transition. Mm-hmm. Reuters noted that ExxonMobil and Chevron will not be participating in this sort of conference. And ExxonMobil head Rex Tillerson once again said there needs to be an international revenue neutral carbon tax. Of course, we know the stories from Inside Climate News about the Exxon's resistance to any sort of carbon pricing and attacks on the science they once, nurtured. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting to see Rex Tillerson sound this tune and basically say now he claims to want international carbon pricing after years and years of being the steward for opposition to such an idea.
So just to everyone listening in, I mean, just pay attention to the newspaper or the reports on TV or whatever web-based news service you have. When this stuff comes up about the quote-unquote Paris negotiations, there's lots of backdrop to it. It's very, very important. We have to hope that nobody, no U.S. senators, nobody goes over there and tries to throw a hand grenade into the middle of this delicate negotiation that is open and public and certainly vulnerable to people trying to screw it up. And there's enough people out there but things are marching along. They could be better, but I mean, I'm personally fairly happy that we're headed in the right direction, or there might be a good thing happening in Paris at the end of the year, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And while you talked before about potential interference by the fossil fuel industry, it'll be interesting to see, you know, will we actually have fossil fuel industry versus fossil fuel industry?
Yeah, right.
A family brawl involving big oil.
We can only hope. So there's Paris. Paris right now is a fall in Paris. I'm sure it's very beautiful. But back here in the United States, down in the state of South Carolina, there's been some very heavy weather over the last few weeks, DR, right? Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about what you've seen down there, or what's been going on?
Yes, I think one of the biggest stories of the year so far is the devastation in South Carolina as a result of extreme flooding, more of which is expected to take place in the upcoming days. At least a dozen people at last report perished. Who knows how many have been injured or have lost their homes as a result of this onslaught, this deluge of rain. It's been reported that we may never know how much rain because the rain gauges were washed away.
Mm-hmm. I remember seeing a report on TV that had this Hurricane Joaquin, right,
yes,
was out in the Atlantic. But then there was this funny channel of moisture that headed straight for South Carolina. Did you see any pictures like that, any radar shots like that?
Yes, yes.
It was just this weird pattern. So what happened in South Carolina was not so much high wind, but an enormous amount of rain in a very short amount of time. Mm-hmm. And it's my understanding that what's happened is now the rain's been over for the last few days, but so much rain fell that as it drains out, the various dams that control the water system, each one's collapsing like dominoes,
yes,
right?
Exactly, exactly. The dams cannot handle it, and it's just caused so much devastation. I mean, we've seen these reports now of literally caskets being dislodged out of cemeteries.
Well, and there was a report I heard this afternoon on the way home was that there's a town called Georgia in South Carolina, which they basically are evacuating because it is going to be completely flooded, and that much of the city of Charleston does not have fresh water because there's so much water that the fresh water supplies have now been contaminated by you know, all the sort of stuff that gets mixed up in the rainwater. And it's just it's a catastrophe. So question, on a show about climate, question comes, is this a climate event, right?
And
there must be.
How could it not be?
Well, nowadays everything is a climate event, isn't it? But certainly this is consistent with the pattern that scientists have pointed out a lot, many times, that you get more intense weather events, either more dry than usual, a bigger drought, or more intense rains than is common. And I've seen reports that say this is a once-in-a-thousand-year event for South Carolina, right? You saw that stuff, didn't you, DR?
Yes, and it turns out that this is the sixth thousand-year event, so-called, since 2010, including the Tennessee floods in May of 2010, the Mid-Atlantic, Northeast, and New England floods during Hurricane Irene, the Colorado floods in 2013, the deluge in Baltimore in August 2014, and the flooding earlier this year in Nebraska, according to USA Today. And it's interesting, you know, there's this old... I don't know if you've ever heard of this old West Indian saying that hard ears don't hear, by and by you'll feel. And I thought about that phrase because it's like these are the warnings that climate scientists have been given for decades, saying that if you don't cut carbon pollution, there's going to be a deluge. And these warnings have been ignored in so many parts of the country, including, as we discussed prior to tonight, in South Carolina, where former Congressman Robert Inglis was thrown out of office because of his warnings about climate change. And now that old saying, hard ears don't hear, by and by you'll feel, the advice, the warnings that were ignored. It's like that scene The Day After Tomorrow where Dennis Quaid warns the government, do something. He's ignored, and then you see the damage.
Yes.
You see too late. You see all the damage, all the devastation of carbon pollution and the consequences of carbon now in full effect, undeniable, undisputed. And you have to ask yourself, is this finally the point where people smarten the hell up and say...
Yeah, I got to tell you, DR, I think that people who have the hard ears you refer to are not going to get this, but most other people... And I think it's important to, as the president said recently about the Oregon shooting, it's time to politicize it, right?
Yes.
You have to say this is the kind of thing that is going to be more frequent, and that you can't step back and, you know, out of respect for the poor state of South Carolina that's going through so much trouble, and not point out that this is it's not a freak of nature. This is a freak of things that, you know, humans are causing.
Mm-hmm. It is an unnatural disaster.
It's an unnatural disaster. I guess I would agree with you there. Well, DR, we have to leave it there. Let me remind everyone, I'll tell you that MCAN is having, the Massachusetts Climate Action Network, MCAN, is having its fall fundraising drive. So I just wanted to remind everybody that in addition to, well, this podcast, but mostly what MCAN does is it facilitates, it helps local groups in towns across Massachusetts to reduce their carbon footprints, make their towns more efficient. It's a great organization. If you like the idea of doing that, if you're in an MCAN chapter and listening to this podcast, please think about making a donation. I'll put up a link to the page, but it's massclimateaction.net/donate. You can get there. Make yourself feel better. You can take action by donating to MCAN. So let me tell you, DR, that the following things, we will put up links to most of what we talked about on the blog. It's massclimateaction.net/blog. You can leave us a comment there. You can catch up to us on Facebook. It's /massclimateaction. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio. You can always find us on iTunes if you just search for Massachusetts Climate Action. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. So thank you very much for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll see you all again next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.